So last Sunday, our plan was to drive down and to move Kimberly into her apartment. And so we left here, I don't know, about 8:30 or so. And Kimberly still wanted to go to church. We were just going to kind of meet her at the apartment. And we thought she'd maybe go to the early service. But as we're driving down, our plan was to stop in a place called Florence and get some lunch and then continue on down. And it was we got to Florence about the time that Kimberly's service was starting, and she kind of texted, "Hey, I'm going to be at the service. Just let me know what time you guys are coming through, and I'll kind of leave early." And we love her church. It's a great church. So we just thought, I kind of looked at Amy and I said, "Why don't we just go? We'll get there just in time for the message," and we wouldn't be there in time for the music, but we would get there for the message. And love her pastor. Actually, Amy read a book by their pastor a while back, and it was kind of neat how it all just worked out where Kimberly was attending his church. And so anyway, we kind of went, and I'll be real honest, you know, Dustin and I kind of talk about this occasionally. Because I'm up here all the time and because of the way that I study and work through stuff, whenever I sit in a service and somebody else is teaching, it's really hard to not just to sit there and to be fed, because you're kind of analyzing and you're watching and you're looking and what would you do differently or what could you, you know? Yeah, you know. Oh, so anyways, you know, it is a struggle, because that's what we do. It's sort of like, you know, if you're a carpenter and some guy comes in and wants to build something in your house, you're going to go nuts, going to be going like, wait, why don't you do this? Why don't you change that over here? Why don't you do this? So that's kind of the way. So I always have to tell myself, just sit and listen. Well, he got up and he did a topical, which is something we'll do occasionally here, but you know, most of the time we're verse by verse, book by book. So he did a topical, and to be real honest, it was a master class in how to do a topical message. I just sat there, and I was fed, and it was just neat to see how he went through it. He was talking about how to get the most out of your Bible, how to study the Word, and what he was using was he would put pictures of his own Bible with all the highlighting and things circled, and how he went through the Word of God in his own personal time. And I was thinking, this guy's got props. So it made me think today, I got a prop. I thought, if he can do a prop, I can use a prop too. But to be real honest, I'm a little bit leery about doing this prop this morning, because it has to do with something I was given as a kid, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm a little bit weird about it this morning, so just, you know those people who sort of, they have an accomplishment as a young kid, maybe in high school, and then for the rest of their lives, that's the only accomplishment, and they sort of all go back to that, and you sort of feel sad for them? Okay, because you're kind of like, he's just living in the past. This kind of feels like that this morning, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Amy was downstairs getting ready to look for things that we might have to help Kimberly out in her apartment. So I didn't know that at first. I was just happy she was cleaning the basement. And then it kind of dawned on me, she was looking for stuff to give Kimberly, right? Well, she found this box of stuff. Didn't even have anything written on it, but she found this box of stuff. And she asked me, she's like, what do you want to do with this box? And so I went and I pulled the box out. And I noticed that it was a box that had some stuff in it from when I was a kid. And one of the things that was in the box, and again, I feel a little bit weird about doing this, but you'll get it, was this little tiny trophy. And I looked at it and it said, "Hardest Worker 1977. Now, most of you know that I was a swimmer. My mom was, she kind of directed the pool and then a man-made lake from Ashwaubenon, Wisconsin. So she had us in the water when I think I was 6. I joined the swim team when I was 8. But man, I was a screw-up. Literally a screw-up. I got in trouble. Should I put them right here? I got in trouble all the time. And I had a reputation for getting in trouble all the time. And I was the kind of guy that I just didn't get in trouble, but anybody that hung around with me, I also got in trouble. And I wouldn't be surprised if the people that then hung out with those people that I got in trouble also got in trouble. That was my reputation. And so they were constantly talking to me. They were, you know, mom being the director of the pool. Of course, she's going to hear about it. Your son, you know. And so I got in trouble all the time. And not just in this pool, but even outside the pool. And so I had some struggles with some friend of mine, and we ended up getting in some trouble where I ended up getting arrested and ended up having to go to juvenile court. And that was sort of the last straw. Mom and Dad had it with me. And I think I've even told you this story before where my dad had kind of warned me not to hang around with the friend that I got in trouble with because he was a corrupting influence as well on me. And I just totally disregarded Dad's warning, and I said, I don't care, you know. And I went ahead and I violated the law that he had laid down. And I've told you the story before where Mom caught me and said, wait till your dad comes home. So I waited till my dad came home, and he took me downstairs in the basement, and he applied the plank of discipline to the seat of learning. He was very calm, very methodical about it. But I learned Dad's in authority. Dad's authority. Dad's in control, right? And it radically changed my life. But right at that same time, I got to thinking about the trouble I had been getting into in the pool as well. And one of the awards that the swim team gave out every year, they gave out three awards. One, I think, was most valuable swimmer. One was most improved. And the other one was hardest worker. And I kind of looked at that and I thought, you know, I'm such a screw-up. And I realized I was a screw-up. I wasn't saved at the time, but that stuff was sinking in, that I'm really messing up here, and I'm always in trouble, I'm getting people in trouble. And so I thought, you know what? I want to get that hardest worker award. That's what I want to do. You know, part of it was pride. We had about 200 or 300 kids on swim team, and in my head I'm thinking, I get the hardest worker, I can prove to everyone I'm a hard worker, you know? So I set my mind, I remember telling my mom, I came home and I said, Mom, I'm going to get that hardest worker award this year. And she's like, oh, that's nice, honey. Now, do you think for a minute she believed it? Probably not, because her kid was a screw-up. But I set my mind to it. Now, the pool was about a mile or two away. And so I would get on my bike, and I would bike to swim team practice in the morning, and I would try to stay out of trouble in the pool, you know. But I not only did that, because they also had other practices during the day. And they weren't the time that I was supposed to practice, but I turned around and would go back home, and I'd go back up to the pool, and I asked the coach, can I do this practice too? And can I stay for this practice? And then the next practice. Why? I want the hardest worker award. I'm sure she probably thought, yeah, right. You know? So I did. I would go up to the pool, do my stuff, I go home, maybe have some lunch, some other, then I'd ride my bike back up to the pool, and I'd do more practices, and I'd go back. And the whole summer I kept thinking, I want that hardest worker award. I want that hardest worker award. And so I worked hard, I persisted. It wasn't always fun. My friends were all off doing other things. And Mom even commented years later, she's like, you did that by yourself. And I did. I just get on my, didn't need my parents' motivation. No, I just, why? I had my eyes on this. All right? So, get to the end of the year, they have a big banquet. Time for all the awards and stuff. And to be real honest, I was sitting there thinking, I didn't get it. Look at all these other people here, 300 people, I didn't get it, right? So they're going through the others. You know, they always did the hardest worker one last. So they did the other. My best friend got the most valuable. And now I'm like, oh, man, he got a trophy. I'm not going to get a trophy, you know. So Debbie Verkaderen was the coach. And she kind of stopped. She goes, now we got the hardest worker. And I remember this vividly. I don't remember exactly how she said it. But I remember her kind of stumbling a little bit going, okay, this next award, this is kind of weird. I never would have imagined this kid getting this. And she begins to tell the story about how what a screw-up he was and all the trouble he got in. And she's going through all this stuff, you know, and I'm just going to sit. And I'm not thinking it was me. I'm just kind of, I'm not going to get a trophy, you know. And all of a sudden, she mentioned my name. I was like, and I looked at my mom, and my mom, her mouth was agape. Her eyes were this big. She's like. And so I kind of walked up and grabbed my little trophy. I haven't seen that since I stuck it in the box. Now, again, it makes me weird even sharing that, just because, you know, sort of like self-grandiose. It's not about that. It's just, it was interesting as I thought about that thing itself. I had this goal. I looked at this and I wanted something so desperately that I was willing to persist. I was willing to work at it. And what's interesting is that did kind of set the trajectory of my life, because I began to realize that hard work would pay off. And that carried all the way through high school and even to this day in the things that I do. So the reason I share the illustration this morning It's not so I can relive the glory days of my past. I'm sure nobody back then even remembers. It's not like my name was etched in stone or anything like that. This is the best I got. He's actually metal, so it's pretty good. You know, he's pretty solid. It's a good trophy. But he still sits in a box. I don't have him out displayed or anything. But it made me think of Jacob this morning, because what we see in Jacob this morning is he wanted something so bad he was willing to persist at it. He wanted the Lord's blessing. And the lesson we're going to see today is that he persisted at that. If you remember the story, it's a little odd. It's in Genesis chapter 32. It's kind of an odd story. Jacob is traveling back from the land of Canaan, and he's scared because Esau was coming out to meet him with 400 men. And if you remember, when Jacob left to go to the land of Canaan, it was because Esau threatened to kill him, wanted to kill him. And so he's been gone for 20 years. He's now going back home, and he's afraid that Esau may still want to kill him. And especially when he sees hears about these 400 men coming out. You know, his brother's supposed to be going out to greet him. He's bringing this practically an army with him, so he's afraid. He not only prayed to God for protection, but he did almost everything he could to assuage Esau's anger. Remember, he sent him over 500 different animals in groups of three, where he sent them out, the first group, and supposedly Esau would see that and wonder what that is, and then the next gift would come a little bit later, and then the next gift would come. He's really milking this for what it's worth. And as we talked about 2 weeks ago, I believe that there was more to that than just assuaging his anger or appeasing him. I believe that he was making restitution, and we saw that in the text. So he was doing that, but he still, nonetheless, he was afraid. Now, Jacob's camp, where he had stopped, was at a place that's referred to as the Jabbok River. It was a little ford there. It's a tributary that comes into the Jordan River. And so he had come to that, and crossing over the Jordan River ultimately would take him into the land of Canaan again, back home. And so that's where he's at. But he sent his family across, and then he goes back across, and he stays on the opposite side of the river, and he's completely alone. It's the middle of the night. He's at this ford. He's all by himself, probably pitch black like we can imagine. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, totally out of nowhere, this stranger shows up and starts engaging him in a wrestling match. Starts wrestling with him. It's a little odd, isn't it? But that's where we're at. Now, at some point during this wrestling match, he discovers or realizes that it's God that is wrestling with him. God in the flesh wrestling with him. And so when he recognizes that, he now wants the Lord to bless him, and he refuses to give up until he gets the blessing from the Lord. He persists. So I'm going to look at this text today in three different groups, if you will. I'm going to break it down into three sections. The first is that Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessing was revealed in his weakness, not his strength. The second is that Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessing actually led to God's blessing and a new identity for him. And then lastly, Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessing emboldened his faith. We're going to see how those apply to us today. Let's go ahead and look at the first part of that. Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessing being revealed in his weakness rather than his strength. Look at Genesis chapter 32. We're going to look at the first, verse 24 through 26, the first few verses there. So chapter 32, starting at verse 24 through 26. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So initially, when this man appears out of nowhere, we're not told who he is. It just refers to him as a man who shows up. Later in the passage, Jacob will identify him as the Lord. So we have information at this point that Jacob doesn't quite have. We know that this is the Lord. Now, in Hosea chapter 12, verses 3 and 4, it refers to him as an angel or a messenger of God. Now, here's the thing about that. Is it a messenger, an angel of God, or is it God himself? Well, when you see this repeated throughout the scriptures, where you see a reference to God, but that same God is referred to as an angel or a messenger, that's a reference to the pre-incarnate Christ. We see that throughout the book of Genesis. It's God in the flesh in the form of the pre-incarnate Christ here on earth. We have a number of examples in this. We have God walking in the garden with Eden. We believe that that was Christ walking in the garden with him. We have the Lord visiting Abraham and sitting outside his tent. That was the pre-incarnate Christ. We see the Lord visiting Hagar in the wilderness and talking with her. Again, we believe that's a reference to the pre-incarnate Christ. We see Gideon talking with the Lord under the oak tree. Again, the pre-incarnate Christ. Now you may ask why that is. It's as we go through the Old Testament. In fact, I did a series years ago on the number of occurrences of Christ in the Old Testament. One of the things that we learn about Jesus in the New Testament is that one of his responsibilities is to reveal the Father to us. And the way that he does that is in the New Testament, he literally took on human flesh born as a baby to reveal God to us as part of God's purpose and plan. It was no different in the Old Testament, where the pre-incarnate Christ appears in human form, not literally in human flesh, but in human form, to reveal God to us. That's the way that they saw God. And so here we believe that this man was the angel of the Lord, the pre-incarnate Christ. So he shows up. Again, not told exactly who he is. He begins to wrestle with him, and he wrestles all night long, but it says that he couldn't overcome him or overpower him. So there's a number of things that we're not really told specifically. We're not only not told who he is, but we're not told why it took all night long. We're not told why the Lord couldn't overpower or didn't overpower Jacob, and we're also not really told why he dislocated his hip. So we're kind of left to figure this out with some speculation, but let's walk through this. Why did the Lord wrestle with Jacob? Again, the Bible doesn't tell us explicitly. However, consider this. Esau was someone who was constantly contending or struggling with others. That's the way he was. That's who he was. He struggled with Esau to get what he wanted in the blessing and the birthright. He was in constant struggle with Laban when he was back in Mesopotamia. Remember that? He was always fighting with Laban to some degree. Laban deceived him over the wives, and then he deceived him over his wages, and then after Jacob left the land, Laban chased him down, and he still had more contention with them. He also contended with Laban's sons, because remember when he was growing his own flocks, and he worked out a deal with Laban to receive basically his own estate of sorts. And the sons weren't happy about that because Jacob was becoming richer than Laban was. And so they came, and so he was contending with them. He even fought or contended with Rachel, his wife. Remember when Rachel was upset because she wasn't able to bear children, and she went to Jacob, pointed the finger at him. Give me children! And what does Jacob do? Am I the Lord? So there was contention with them as well. So it seems that Jacob was always wrestling, always struggling, always contending with people for earthly things. But the question is, what about when it came to things related to God? Was he willing to wrestle or to persist or to pursue those things? So the Lord's wrestling with Jacob seemed to fit this pattern in Jacob's life. It's, I believe, what we're going to see here is that the Lord is going to use that willingness for Jacob to be contentious, to struggle, to fight, to wrestle for what he wants. God's going to use that to now teach Jacob something about his faith. Is he willing to put that same kind of energy, wrestling, pursuit, if you will, into receiving something from the Lord? So I believe that's why the Lord wrestled with him. We'll see that play out a little bit here. But the other question I have about this is, why couldn't the Lord overpower Jacob? Look back at verse 25. Notice what it says there in verse 25. When he, this is the angel of the Lord, saw that he had not prevailed against him. When the angel of the Lord says, I'm not prevailing against Jacob, it says that he, the angel, touched the socket of Jacob's thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. So why would the Lord now, or why wasn't he able to overcome Jacob? To be frank, I look at this and think, well, this is the Lord, creator of the universe. And he's having trouble wrestling with Jacob, a man? What is up with that? Well, you notice, it doesn't say when he saw that he couldn't prevail. It says that he hadn't prevailed. There's a difference between that. It doesn't say the Lord couldn't have. In fact, we know that he does, because all he's got to do is go touch his hip and he's done. Right? So certainly he can prevail. But it says that he hadn't prevailed over him. Let me give you an example here. When I was living with a family back in Wausau, after I graduated college, I lived with a family and they had some kids. One of them was a little, I believe she was five. Her name was Katie. She's a namesake for my own Katie back there. And one of the things I would do when the parents would, in fact, I remember the very first time they came down, they saw me in the kitchen or something. They said, "Oh, by the way, Dave and I are going out for a date. The kids are yours." And they laughed. I'm like, "No!" I had never babysat their kids before, you know, but they planned it just perfect. So there I was, right? So we came up with this little game thing where I would take my hand and I would put it on her head and she would try to get at me. And I would literally just take and push her away. And she'd come right back, you know. And we could do this for an hour to the point where I was just getting exhausted. She just would not give up. Now, could I have taken care of that? I could have picked her up and thrown her to her room, right? But I didn't. I kept pushing her back and she'd put her hand or her head right there in the hand and I would do this, you know, and she would just go at it. Just would not give up. She would persist. And she would keep going and keep going and keep going. I believe that's the picture that we see here when it says that when the angel saw that he hadn't prevailed, it means that Jacob hadn't given up. Jacob was still wrestling all night long. No matter how long the angel wrestled with him, Jacob just kept going. In fact, the words that are used here can refer to, when it says prevail, can refer to the idea of persisting, enduring, continuing on. It does have the idea of overpowering, but it also can simply refer to the idea of persisting at something. And so, when it says that the angel saw that he hadn't persisted, I believe the way that we are to understand that is much like little Katie. He just refused to give up. He just continued to persist. Which means ultimately then to having his hip dislocated. Now, why did the Lord dislocate his hip? The simple answer might be because that's what it took. He just wanted to end the fight. He wants to go home. Back to heaven. I think that would be a mistake though, because dislocating Jacob's hip, the Lord actually took away Jacob's power. And I think he's going to teach him something here. And it's that by taking away Jacob's power, his ability to continue wrestling, the only thing Jacob could do is to persist by clinging to him to get what he wanted. You know, I never wrestled. I was a swimmer. It's the better sport, by the way. But anyway, I had some wrestler friends. I never really realized this, and this is where, you know, you get on the debate about AI. I think we've even joked about this, about, you know, pastors now they're using AI in their sermons. Well, I decided to use AI in my sermon this morning. I decided just to do a quick Google search. Importance of the hips in wrestling. And AI is the first thing that comes up now in Google search. I didn't realize this, but it's kind of fascinating. The hips, according to AI, Google's AI, are the primary source of powering a person's body when they wrestle. It allows wrestlers to lift, twist, and actually drive through their opponents. Mobility in the hips enables wrestlers to change direction quickly and transition between positions. Strong hips help wrestlers resist takedowns and maintain a stable base. Good hip movement helps with escapes and reversals. Many takedowns rely on the hips to perform the takedown, to take their opponents to the ground and to drive them into the ground. It's interesting, as I was doing, I spent like 30 minutes just looking this stuff up, started seeing videos where, when I was in swimming, we always worked on endurance, and then the type of weightlifting we would do was more resistance training than bulking up. And there's a reason for that. It's much better for swimming, right? So we had certain exercises we would do. I was fascinated by the number of videos that I saw popping up that were all about hip workouts. I was like, this is crazy. It was all about how to build your hips, or how to do this, how flexibility, and all this. So it makes perfect sense. They're wrestling. They're in the dirt. They're going at it. And the angel decides to take away one of the most important parts of wrestling with Jacob. He touches in the hips, which now makes it nearly impossible for Jacob to continue wrestling. He cannot continue on in his own strength. Everything up until this point was Jacob, but no longer. Because he loses the most important, the most powerful part of his body. He can no longer, in fact, a little bit later we're told that he walks away limping. There are many who believe that Jacob limped the rest of his life, that it was a permanent dislocation. So with a dislocated hip, Jacob was now weakened so he could no longer acquire God's blessing on his own strength. In fact, look at verse 26. The angel says, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." I can't explain that. Don't know why he was concerned, but it's morning. Maybe he's tired of wrestling all night long. But he says, "Let me go, dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go," what? "Until you bless me." So even wounded, even weakened, Jacob refuses to stop. And all he can do now is hang on to him. All he can do in his weakness is cling. I think that's partly the lesson here. What's the takeaway for us? God weakened Jacob so that he couldn't prevail in his own strength when seeking the Lord's blessing. Instead, God blessed him when he clung to him in his weakness. Do you think there's a life lesson in that for us? Reminds me of something Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians. Turn to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul says something very similar. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, look at verse 7. Oh, wait a minute. I've got to go to 2 Corinthians. I almost started reading to you about spiritual gifts. 2 Corinthians 12. Paul, speaking of himself, he says, "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason," in other words, Paul was saying, because of all the revelations he had been giving, he says, "To keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell within me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distress, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, I am strong.'" You see, Paul recognized that his only hope was not found in his own strength, but ultimately in his weaknesses. Why? Because it's in our weaknesses that we are forced to cling to Christ. That's the way the Lord's blessings come. Jacob persisted in pursuing God's blessings in his weakness, not his strength. He couldn't. The Lord took his strength away so he might learn, I believe, that pursuing God's blessing would have to come through his weaknesses, not his strengths. Next section. Jacob persisted in pursuing God's blessings, and it ultimately led to God's blessings and ultimately a new identity. Look back at chapter 32. We're down to verse 27 now. Jacob now, so he said to him, "What is your name?" And so then the angel, the man, said to Jacob, the angel says to Jacob, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." So we find now that Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessing actually leads to God's blessing, but ultimately a new identity for him as well. It's interesting, I don't know why Jacob would be asked this question. Did the Lord not know he was wrestling with Jacob? Well, that's a silly question. I believe he asked him a rhetorical question. He wants Jacob to say, "My name is Jacob," and the reason is he's going to set up a contrast between Jacob's name and identity and the new name and new identity that he would give him. So he asks a rhetorical question. He knew it was Jacob. So he asks him this rhetorical question, "What's your name?" And Jacob says, "It's Jacob." And he says, "You're no longer going to be Jacob." And he gives him a new name. There's a play on this word in Jacob's name here. If you remember, symbolically, Jacob's name referred to one who would trip up or supplant someone. It's a play on the word for heel. That's Jacob's name. It's a play on the word for heel. And it was used to refer to supplanting or tripping somebody up. In fact, Esau alluded to this after Jacob deceptively took his birthright. Esau says to his father, Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted, tripped up me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Jacob was known as a deceiver, somebody who tripped up. We know that from the passages that we've studied in the past, right? His name represents his identity, who he is, his reputation. But now, after wrestling with God, Jacob's given a new name, and it's the name Israel. Now, there's debate over exactly what this means. If you have notes in your Bible there, you may see that some versions will say that Israel means God strives. Others say it means he who or one who strives with God. So either God strives or one who strives with God. Which is it? Well, the context here suggests the latter, because if you notice, it goes on in verse 28 there and it says, "For you have striven with God and with men and prevailed." So I believe here that Israel means one who struggles or strives with God, because that's what the text bears out for us. Hosea repeated something very similar when he referred to this event back in Hosea chapter 12, verse 4. He said, "Yes, he wrestled with the angel and he prevailed. He wept and sought his favor." And so the implication here is that Jacob, not that he had defeated God, but that he had persisted in wrestling with the Lord. He continued. He refused to give up to receive God's blessing. And the name Israel would now represent that. It would be a reminder that he was one who didn't prevail over God in the sense of defeating him, but rather he persisted in that struggle. He was willing to continue not giving up until he received God's blessing. Now, there are four other times that I'm aware of that God renamed someone in the Bible. One of them was Abraham. His name was Abram. He was renamed Abraham because he would become the father of many nations. His wife Sarai was renamed Sarah, which means princess, because she would become the mother of nations. Then we have Jesus naming Simon to Peter, Rock. Why? Because of the foundation that he would become as part of the apostles, as the church. He would become a rock, a foundation for the church. And then here we have Jacob being renamed Israel. So he would no longer be known as Jacob, the heel catcher, the deceiver, but rather he would be known as Israel, one who persisted with God, refused to give up until he received the blessing. Now if you look at verse 29, his persistence paid off. Then Jacob asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." But the angel refused. "Why is it you ask my name?" Again, a little difficulty there. Why the Lord refused to give him his name there. Jacob knew that it was the Lord. He didn't need the name. There's all kinds of debates over why he refused to do it there. But the most important thing, I think, is found in the very last phrase. "And he blessed him there." Jacob had persisted. He wanted the Lord's blessing. He refused to give up until the Lord blessed him. And what happens? The Lord honors that persistence and blesses him. Now we have to be careful here. Jacob didn't earn the Lord's blessing here. God's blessings come as a matter of grace, but they do come through persistence. They are, in some respects, a reward for our persistence. We're going to see that as we look at some other stuff briefly. But what we find here is that his persistence paid off. He was not only given a new identity, but he was actually given the very thing that he sought, which was the blessing of the Lord. So what's our takeaway for this? Well, the Lord was pleased with Jacob's persistence, so much so that he blessed him and gave him a new identity. But the Bible also promises us God's blessing and more if we persist and if we persevere. The New Testament is filled with that. I'll just cite these for you. Romans chapter 2, verse 7, Paul wrote, "God will render to each person according to his deeds, to those who by perseverance in doing good seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life." There's a reward there for perseverance. Colossians chapter 1, verses 22 and 23 says, "He has now reconciled you in his fleshly body through death, in order to present you before him, holy and blameless and beyond reproach." But followed up with this: "If indeed you continue, if you persist in the faith firmly established and steadfast, not moved away from the hope of the gospel that you have heard, which was proclaimed in all creation under heaven." Hebrews chapter 10, verse 36. "For you have need of endurance. Why? So that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. Another one, James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trials. Why? For once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. There is, and these are just a sample of the passages, the New Testament constantly reminds us of the need for us to persist, to pursue, to never give up. The ultimate goal, we will someday see Christ and receive the rewards of our faith. But we're encouraged to persist, to never give up. Paul refers to some individuals as suffering shipwreck. We don't want that. We're encouraged to pursue, to persist, to endure through struggles and difficulties, all kinds of stuff, with the hope of receiving that ultimate blessing of Christ and the rewards that come with our eternal salvation, are we not? The last section is verses 30 through 33, and it's Jacob's persistence in pursuing God's blessings ultimately emboldened his faith. Look at verses 30 through 33. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore to this day the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. I want to focus primarily on verse 30 there. Jacob has done what he's done before. He memorializes the place by giving it a name. He's done this at least two other times. He names the place Peniel, which means face of God. And it's because he says, I've seen the face of God here. Now, as I began to work through this passage, I actually discovered there's two different approaches to this verse. Exactly what was Jacob saying when he said these words? The first approach to this particular verse is that Jacob was expressing shock and awe that he was still alive after seeing God. In fact, that's what's seen in most of our translations. They translate it much like the New American Standard, which says, I have seen the face, or I've seen God face to face, yet my life has been delivered. This is similar to what Hagar said. If you remember Hagar, after she met the Lord, Genesis chapter 16, she says, have I even remained alive after seeing him? That was a legitimate question. I remember when Isaiah saw the throne of God and he says, whoa, I've become undone. It's in some respects a terrible thing to see the Lord that way. Terrible in a good way. I remember when another passage here, Manoah and his wife, when they saw the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, we will certainly die because we've seen the Lord. That's from Genesis, or from Judges chapter 13. They had seen the angel of the Lord and thought that was it. They were going to die because of that. And so it's a very valid, legitimate interpretation and translation to look at these words here and assume that's what Jacob meant, that he was just relieved that he had seen and wrestled with the Lord and thank God he was still alive. That's valid and possible. However, there's another approach to the passage which translates it a little differently, and I actually believe it's probably the more favorable of the two, and I'll explain it in a second here. And it's that pretty much this, that Jacob was expressing relief and confidence, not that he was still alive, but rather that God had proactively answered his prayer to protect him from Esau. Now, why is that? First and foremost, another way to translate the word that's used or that's translated as yet there is just a simple and. Okay? And so some translations translate it this way: I have seen God's face or God face to face, and my life is preserved. And this word preserved is actually in a tense that suggests sort of a future ongoing thing. My life has been preserved. And it could be a forward-looking thing, meaning future. It's important, I think, because of this. If you remember back in Genesis chapter 32, verse 11, when Jacob prays, he says this, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother. And Jacob uses that exact same word for deliver here when he says, my life has been preserved. It's my life has been delivered. So what you have is Jacob praying, Lord, deliver me from Esau. And now, after wrestling with the Lord, he says, my life either has been or is, will be preserved. In other words, a recognition that through this wrestling and receiving God's blessing, he now has had his faith emboldened to where he no longer is going to fear Esau. And I believe that's what we see when we look at the next passage. I don't believe there's any fear in that passage. He leaves this event more confident in his faith. He leaves this event having been emboldened in his faith, recognizing that God has answered his prayers. One of the things I love about David in the Psalms is so oftentimes David in the Psalms, he begins by crying out in fear, but he finishes the psalm already completely convinced that his enemies are taken care of, and he's still sitting in the pit. Nothing has changed. Circumstances are still the same. The enemies are still out there. They are still threatening him, but David ends the psalm by saying, you've delivered me. He's that confident. I believe that's what we see here in Esau. That it's not just, thank God I survived. Thank God he didn't kill me. But rather, the Lord has delivered me. The Lord has preserved me. It's a reflection of a renewal of his faith and confidence in God. He had seen him face to face. He persisted with him. He was blessed by him. And he realized that he had nothing to fear in Esau because the Lord had preserved him and will preserve him. Now, I'll give you another illustration here. It goes back to that 1977 with this little guy here. And again, I hate to do this only because it's almost a little embarrassing, but I'm going to use it as a good illustration, I think. So, when I won this little dude here, should I say won or should I say awarded? I'll say awarded. When I was awarded this little dude, man, that sparked something in me. You know when you work really hard at something and you actually get the reward of it, what does that do to you? Makes you want to work that much harder, doesn't it? Right? So I had, that was worth it. I had also seen changes in my times and seen other, and plus I liked being a better kid. You know, I didn't miss the old kid. So here's the thing. The next year shows up, and I'm thinking, there's a trophy. This one's on the shelf, you know, it's over here, and I want to fill it out, right? So there's another. So that's, I set my heart to do the same thing the next year. Now, unfortunately, the next year, some other chump got it, and I left empty-handed. But that just even motivated me a little bit more, right? And so I doubled down for the next year, and this little puppy showed up that year, 1979, little hardest worker award. This was cheap plastic, though. That didn't deter me, though, because, you know. And then the next year, this little puppy showed up. So 3 different years, right? Now, again, it's a little silly. Not trying to live my glory days of the past. But when I got that first little guy, man, I was like, wow, this really paid off. You know, this persistence, there's something to this, you know? And it motivated me and it moved me to want to keep working hard. And in my case, it paid off 2 more seasons where I was awarded the award. And when I look at Jacob here, I believe he was emboldened in his faith because we're going to see this. We won't see it today, but when he goes to meet Jacob, it's funny because he moves to the front. He goes to the front of his family. He's the first one out. And he goes to Esau, and it doesn't appear that he has any more fear. But he now is trusting the Lord, and so I believe that by persisting and receiving the Lord's blessing, that he's now emboldened in his faith. I think that's a good New Testament principle for us as well. When God wrestled with Jacob, he not only taught him to persist so that he might receive his blessing, but he also wanted to perfect his faith. And so part of that wrestling was intended to perfect Jacob's faith. He had always been willing to wrestle for other things, but now he's wrestling for the most important thing, which is the Lord's blessing. And the Lord perfects his faith as he does that. And God, I think, does the same thing with us. Now, he may not show up all of a sudden. I don't expect to someday walk in here and see Dustin all busted up and bruised up and say, what happened? He goes, oh, the Lord came and wrestled me last night. I don't expect to see that.
Happens every night.
It happens every night, yeah. Steve Schmeckel would have said there's probably demonic things, pressure, you know, that are, you know. But the one thing the Bible does tell us is that the Lord, we do wrestle in some capacity, don't we? Because the Lord allows us to suffer through trials and tribulation and struggles. Why? To perfect us in our faith. So he may not come down literally, at least in my experience, and wrestle with us physically, but he does allow us to wrestle and to struggle, and that is part of God's doing. He permits it. In fact, he may even direct it at times. We're told that he chastises us for the purpose of discipline, right? James wrote that the purpose of trials is to produce endurance, which ultimately, he says, leads to becoming perfect and complete. Turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. Verses 2 through 4, he says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. Knowing, another way to translate that is because you know, that the testing of your faith produces what? Endurance. Persistence. And let endurance have its perfect result. What is that perfect result of endurance? What is the end result of endurance? That we might be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. That's the goal. So the whole purpose of trials, wrestling through that in everyday life, is that our faith might become perfect and complete. Peter wrote that wrestling with trials is a necessary part of perfecting our faith. In fact, just listen to this, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary. Another way to translate that is, since it's necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Peter nails it. Trials are necessary. Why? Because they perfect our faith. In the same way that God, wrestling with Jacob, perfected his faith, emboldened his faith that he might be able to walk forward with more confidence, more faith, more trust in the Lord as he faced Esau, the same thing happens with us. We go through trials, we know what God does with those trials, and it emboldens our faith and allows us to continue growing in endurance and ultimately leading to what? Being perfect and complete. Paul even went as far as to declare that hope and confidence in God is the ultimate result of wrestling through trials. I want you to turn to one last passage, Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. He says, and not only this, but we also exalt in our tribulations. Why? Knowing that tribulation brings about, there's that word again, perseverance, persistence. And what? Perseverance leads ultimately to proven character. Interesting. Jacob was given a new name, a new identity, representing a new character, a man who wrestles with God, a man who persists with God. So perseverance leads to proven character, and then ultimately, what does proven character lead to? It says hope. Hope. The blessings that we have. So I think when we look at Jacob here in our passage this morning, he's a good example for us, is he not? An example for us as we walk in Christ. He persisted in his weakness rather than his own strength. That's a good example for us, that it doesn't come down to us just muscling through. We have to learn, just like Jacob, to cling to the Lord in our weaknesses, to desperately want his blessing so much that we are willing to cling in our weakness rather than our own strengths. The same way Jacob persisted, endured, chased after, if you will, until he received the Lord's blessing. He didn't give up until he got it. Remember, the angel said, let me go, it's morning. And Jacob says, no, I am not letting go until what? You bless me. Same thing for us. We should be clinging, holding on to Christ until ultimately he returns and we receive the blessing. That's what we're told in the scriptures. Paul, one of my favorite passages, comes from 2 Timothy, where Paul basically says, this is it. I'm being poured out like a drink offering, but I know I've fought the good fight. I've hung in there. And I know what's waiting for me now. That's the goal for each of us. And Jacob, he held on until he got the blessing. Didn't earn it, if you will, from that perspective, meaning he wasn't worthy of it, but his persistence was rewarded by receiving the Lord's blessing. It'd be the same of us. And then lastly, because he persisted and emboldened his faith, he was able to walk forward and meet Esau with confidence and trust in the Lord, knowing that the Lord had preserved and would preserve him. And the same thing is true of us. When we persist, when we continue seeking the Lord's blessings, we cling to him, we refuse to give up, that emboldens our faith. That endurance that is built ultimately has an end result, which is perfecting our faith. Amen?